Blog Talk Radio.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the.
Hey, I was Monday and Wednesday.
I know.
Yeah, that
That check still hasn't cleared yet, Matt.
I know, right?
Oh, man. So how's everybody been doing since Sunday?
Yeah, I know. So long ago.
it's been kind of rough for me. A family friend passed in a car accident, but...
Oh, sorry to hear that.
I'm sorry to hear that, man. Condolences to you and your family and their family.
Well, he was one of my son, my 19-year-old son's one of his friends. So yeah, we did the whole memorial thing earlier this evening. It was very sombering.
Yeah.
But other than that, everything is great. I kind of spent most of the rest of the day catching up with some Sasquatch television broadcast.
Yeah, what? I'm trying to remember. I don't think it's on anymore. What was that show that they had on that? It was the one real crazy guy. And I think it was on Destination America or whatever that turned into, but he'd always call him, like, he'd never say the full word, he'd just say Squatch, and he was just kind of like, he was real goofy and strange. Do you remember the show I'm talking about?
Oh, that could be about 20 of them right now.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, I can't remember. I think it was on Destination America on that network or Animal Planet or something like that. But
I'm not sure. I mean, the one show that I wish they'd bring back that I used to really love was Monster Quest. And really wish they'd bring that one back. I mean, even the narrator's voice alone kind of set the tone for everything.
Yeah.
That
was one thing I liked about Destination Truth is it wasn't just about ghosts. I mean, they do crypto, they do UFOs, they do, you know, a bunch of different stuff.
Well, Josh is coming back with a new show here in a couple of months. It won't be called Destination Truth. I don't know exactly what the name of it, I don't recall, I should say, what exactly the name of the new show will be, but I know it's not Destination Truth.
Yeah,
so I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah, I knew there was something coming out, and from what I understand, it's supposed to be in the same kind of premise.
It's basically going to be the same thing. Him and his team going, all around the world, investigating these mysteries. So it's going to be, you know, pretty much the same show, but different name, and they might do a few things different, I'm sure. But, you know, just having Josh back on and having him back out there, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it was last year he came to Chicago Ghost Conference 5 and that Ursula Bielski runs. And it was cool, like, I listened to him speak and all that, but afterwards all the talent that was at Ghost Conference got to go out to dinner to this place called a restaurant called Great Escape, which they put out a big buffet and everything, and they had a whole dining room secluded for all of us. And
right.
I sat down with him and Dave Schrader and Jeff Belanger, and I mean we had a hell of a conversation.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That would be so. I love his humor that he throws into his shows. I've talked to him a few times online. But you know, never in person or had the chance to hang out with him. But yeah, I would love to. That would be so much fun. I imagine.
Well, speaking of humor, I have to continue the tradition of what we do on Terrify Radio. Jody usually does this, but since she's not with us tonight, I'm going to do this. It won't be as great as what Jody does and some of the stuff she digs up. But we report on news that is out there that you don't normally hear about, on the television news. right?
Right.
So here's some, you know, and when I read these stories and then when Jody does them, it makes you, I'd rather run into, you know, spirit, I'd rather deal with the spirit world or UFOs or Bigfoot any day compared to real-life human beings and some of the stupidity that they do in the world.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, I get asked quite often. Aren't you scared of being out there in the middle of the woods, you know, with the wildlife at night? And I'm like, no, not really. But you put me in a crowded place with a bunch of humans, and yeah, I'm kind of freaking out.
Well, a man wearing only a cowboy hat breaks into Georgia homes, police say. Yes, folks, he broke into homes only wearing a cowboy hat, nothing else. Police in Johns Creek, Georgia, have corralled a man accused of wild and wacky crime spree that included breaking into homes while wearing nothing but a cowboy hat. The gentleman was arrested Monday on more than a dozen charges, including two counts of burglary, criminal trespassing, let's see what else, impersonating a police officer and indecent exposure.
How could it be impersonating a police officer buck naked? If I see someone breaking my house buck naked wearing nothing but a cowboy hat, I'm instantly going to come to the conclusion that they're not a police officer.
The last statement on here is pretty funny. One of the homes that the gentleman allegedly burglarized belongs to a city councilwoman. And she said he made quite an impression.
Oh, my God. That's one for Jody to touch. I'm not going to touch that one.
Yeah. I don't get as raunchy as Jody does, but, you know. For all of us that work every day, I don't know if you heard about this. I know I've heard about this story. A gentleman staged a break-in to get out of work.
What?
Okay.
A gentleman staged a break-in at his home so he wouldn't have to show up to work. He staged a break-in. His wife left. He left for work, waited till his wife left, came back, staged a break-in, then called the cops, and then called his work and said his house had been broken and he couldn't come to work. Only problem is one of the nosy neighbors videotaped him doing the staging. So now he is in jail for it.
My question is, and my train of thought is, this guy must have the worst job in the world.
Yeah.
To go that far.
Well, and that's what I was just thinking about, too. All right, how much effort did he put into staging the break-in? Versus what would he have to do on his day-to-day at work?
Exactly.
To be honest, I think, hey, I'm not feeling well. You know, probably don't want me coming in because I feel like I'm sick and I have a stomach bug. I think that would work just fine. We'll see if a dickhead boss.
Well, that could be. But, I mean,
right?
to stage a break-in, I mean, obviously he would have had to destroy some of his stuff, so I mean he's gonna have to work extra harder for that. But
oh,
some people are sensitive.
Well,
here you go. Michigan woman too.
A Michigan woman could be heading to jail this week after allegedly bragging on Facebook about beating a random breathalyzer test. The lady is not allowed to use as a condition of her probation for a 2012 drunken driving conviction.
Hey, Kevin, you're pretty grainy right now.
Yeah, you're breaking up pretty good.
Oh, am I? How's that?
A little bit better, yeah.
So what is the Michigan woman going to jail for?
Okay, she could be heading to jail this week after allegedly bragging on Facebook about beating a random breathalyzer test. She's not allowed to drink as a condition of her probation for a 2012 drunken driving conviction and was called in she was on probation and they called her in for a random test after St. Patrick's Day and she beat it. Wow, that's some great English. She beat it. She passed the test, then she bragged about how she beat it. And so
I'll
the probation
law officials, I mean, Facebook is the greatest thing that could ever happen for them with all the idiots in this world.
Let's see, I'm going to find one more, and then we're going to get to our guests because they're patiently waiting on me online here.
I know I said it before, but I really do appreciate you guys including me.
Oh, more the merrier, man. You're part of the family.
Feel the love.
Okay, last one. I always have to go into the more nasty part of it. For Jody, because that's what he normally does. The stories that I've done tonight are pretty G-rated compared to hers. But here we go. Let me open this up here. And dog, quit sniffing my cat, damn it. Damn animals. All right, here we go. Wife calls 911 because hubby wants her to hook up with her sister.
Whoa, hold up. Hubby wants her to hook up with his sister?
Yes. Sisters. A 58-year-old woman in South Carolina called 911 because her 72-year-old husband wanted her to hook up with his sisters.
Now how would this be? Would this be including him?
No.
I mean, are they from Alabama?
I don't know. Let me read you some more here. The woman whose name has been redacted told deputies that she and her husband had some sex problems, but she not only does not want to hook up with her sister-in-law, she wants them prohibited from coming to her house. Yeah.
That just seems creepy on so many levels.
Well, here's another question. Are the sisters into it?
I don't know. I just know the dirty old husband wanted his wife to hook up with his sisters.
Well, I mean, something like that doesn't just pop up over tea and crumpets, you know? I mean, obviously there was some creepy history going on there.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's something. Why would you even think of that? Why not? Oh, you know, the neighbors. You know,
That's what I'm saying.
And how sick of a dude is it that he wants to watch? I wonder if he wants to watch or that was just something that
you girls
go do your thing and then let me know how it turns out.
I don't know, pretty crazy stuff.
For him to suggest it, apparently the sisters were, you know, he knew that they would be down for it, so which makes you wonder how good does he know his sisters?
Yeah.
Or how horrible are his sisters that they have no problem hooking up with his wife and each other?
and their brother, obviously. I mean, that's just creepy on so many levels.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're gonna shift to the topic of our show tonight. tonight. Yeah. We have our guests are Mike Woolley and Debbie King. As I take a squeaky toy away from my dog. Our guests tonight are Mike Woolley and Debbie King McMartin. Mike Woolley lives in a small town named Petrie, which is 15 minutes south of Shreveport, Louisiana. His enthusiasm for hunting started at the tender age of 6 years old as he tagged along with his dad while he squirrel hunted. At the age of 15, his interest turned into deer hunting. On one cold Saturday, December in 1981, while hunting, a doe ran under his deer stand while she was being chased by a Bigfoot. Little did he know that it would be a life-changing event for him. He kept this locked up inside of him for 20 years. He didn't tell anyone about this until recently when the rash of Bigfoot sightings and encounters gave him the courage to share his story. His encounter has become the inspiration for the movie Skookum, The Hunt for Bigfoot. Debbie King McMartin is an author, screenwriter, and independent film producer. Her nonfiction works include the book and screenplay co-authored with Evelyn L. Morgan titled Stone Justice, The True Story of the Only Woman Ever Executed in an Electric Chair in Louisiana and the Last Woman to Ever Be Executed. The screenplay was a winner at the 2002 Writer's Digest Writing Competition, TV Film Script Division. The story rights to the book and script were sold to River Dream Productions and produced a feature film titled The Pardon, including Jamie King and Jason Lewis. Ms. McMartin served as production coordinator for the award-winning documentary film titled Missing, Presumed Dead, produced by Hollywood filmmaker Bill Dumas and narrated by Ed Asner. She's also served as a producer for the award-winning documentary Dreamers and Gamblers, Spirit of the Pioneer Wildcatters. She is currently serving as co-writer, producer for Skookum, The Hunt for Bigfoot, which is now in post-production. And I will bring my guest on here. Hey, guys.
Hey there.
Hey, how you doing?
How are you? We're good. I want to thank you for having us on tonight. We're really excited about the show.
Oh, yes. Mike, how you doing?
All doing pretty good there. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing great, man. Well, go ahead.
Having a little bout of deja vu right now.
Yeah, I'm sorry you didn't get to meet Jody. She's a very avid paranormal researcher, UFO, and she's really into Bigfoot. But she got some great seats at a Cardinals game, so she couldn't pass it up.
I don't blame her.
So we'll start the show off with Mike. If you want to, go ahead and talk about things leading up to your sighting and the sighting itself and, how it changed your life.
Yeah, okay. My encounter happened back on a Saturday in December of 1981. I lived in the woods during hunting season, squirrel hunting, deer hunting, turkey hunting, whatever hunting season. I was in the woods, and also I was in the woods during the summer months checking on deer and seeing how they were running. And I was working a second shift or a swing shift at a local plywood plant, right there by my house, in 311 shift, and I'd work till 11 at night and get off. Come home, eat, get cleaned up, get up about 4 o'clock, go to the woods, hunt about 11 o'clock, come in, get cleaned up, and take me a nap before I had to go to work at 3. Well, and I also took my vacation time, to deer hunt also during that time. excuse me. I went in one Friday afternoon and I said, I'm going to get up early Saturday morning, make a hunt, so anyway, I went in, got off work 11 o'clock at night, come home, you know, ate, got cleaned up, and woke up the next morning at 9:30. Well, I was pretty PO'd at myself, you know, because I wanted to get up early and go deer hunting. And I usually don't do that, like, you know, oversleep. But anyway, I decided that, you know, I had to do some chores around the house and run around, and I just go ahead and make an evening hunt, you know, still salvage part of the day. Well, I did all that, left about 2:30, and where my deer stand was, I drove down a major highway, turned on a secondary road to the right, and went about a mile back in the woods and turned my left. My deer stand was at the end, down end of a logging road, a dead end. That's where I put my deer stand. And the logging road was about a mile from the dirt road I turned off on. Well, halfway down was a little opening, and I turned my truck around heading out. And that's something I always do. I tell everybody, always make sure you got your vehicle heading out. So if something happens, bad accident or something, you get out of there quick. And I parked there. And put all my hunting clothes on, you know, that I had descended and all my other stuff that I needed to put on so I could sneak in, you know, and walk the other half a mile to my stand, you know, where it could be quiet. Well, I got on my stand about 3 o'clock, and I was sitting there, you know, looking due north, 12 o'clock. Temperature's about 30 degrees, beautiful day, not a cloud in the sky. Just cold, you know, about 30 degrees, between 30 and 35. Well, anyway, around 3:30, it was just a few, it wasn't long after 3, I got a glance at my watch. This little young doe, deer come running up from the east and run up to my stand, and just kind of fell out. Under my stand, she was frothing at the mouth, sweated down. Something had been running her. And the first thing come to my mind, it was a big buck running her, and I thought, you know, I'm fixing to kill me a big buck right here. Well, as I was looking back up, out of my peripheral vision, I caught something. Some movement to my right about 2 o'clock. And I looked over that way. About the time I looked over that way, I seen something big, tall, huge, black. First thought it was a bear, and then I said, no, it can't be. It's standing up. It hopped. I said, that's a gorilla or something. Well, anyway, it jumped. It hopped 20 foot over to another tree. Easily hopped. I never seen nothing like that. Something that big, 400 or 500 pounds, going through the air like that far. I got looking at it, and it was, you know, looking at me, and it was about 15 yards from my deer stand, no more than 50 feet. And I got to thinking, I said, you know, there's something going there, you know, 7-8 foot tall, and you know, what the heck is going on? And,
Kevin, what the hell are you doing?
Do I?
What's all that background?
It's not me. I'm not moving.
Brian, was that you?
It was actually my wife. She was using a blender. I had came into the kitchen. I apologize. I didn't think it would register through.
That actually kind of sounded like a Squatch video.
Yeah, go ahead and continue, Mike.
Well, anyway, I was looking at the thing standing behind the tree, and this went on for quite a while, and I didn't know what it was. There was all kind of questions going through my mind, you know, like, was there a circus in town? Did the gorilla escape somewhere? No. nothing, you know, I could come up to answer for, you know, the question. I was looking at this thing, and back then the land was open range. Anybody could hunt. You know, there were no hunting clubs. The land belonged like Boise, Southern, Cascade, Little Anna, you know, places like that on the land. And first come, first serve, we could hunt. Well, anyway, anyway, can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Bunch of noise in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, I was, a lot of times, you know, you put your deer stand up somewhere and people want to hunt where you were hunting and they'd tear it down, you know, leave you nasty messages on it, you know, or some way to spook you out. And I thought maybe that was somebody dressed up in a costume doing that. So, you know, I started talking this thing, telling him, you know, take your costume off, get out of here, get, you know, I'm going to shoot you, you know. And he was looking at me real serious as I was talking to him and giving me a real mean, evil look, sinister look, you know, satanic look. And this went on for, I guess, till I left 15-minute, you know, ordeal. You know, I just, something told me something ain't right because there's no man can jump 20 foot like that, you know, through the air at that kind of weight, weighing that much. And I knew something right there. I knew something was up. But also, where he come from, he come through a real heavy thicket. And, I mean, there was trees in there with those thorn trees. And, you know, he had six, some of them had six-inch thorns on them. It cut you to pieces. I tried to go back there one time to look around for a deer stand, and I couldn't because it was too thick. But something told me something wasn't right because he come from there. You know, and I knew there's no way a man or hardly a dog can get through that, but he come through that. But anyway, he was standing behind that tree and giving me a very evil, mean look. And his eyes, I mean, that's what scared me. I mean, it was horrible. But anyway, I had a pretty good deer rifle, a .270 deer rifle and a 3x9 scope. And I turned my scope down to 3 power. Where I could, you know, it would be blurry because he wasn't 50 feet from me. So I looked through my scope at him to make sure it wasn't human. It looked too human. The face on it was too human. I mean, it had a hairy black gorilla body, like really muscular, between 7-8 foot tall, 400 or 500 pounds, and had a face like a human. And I looked through my scope at it real good. And matter of fact, I had my crosshairs right between his eyes. And I got to looking at his eyelashes and his eyes blinking. I said, man, you know, and the steam, you know, on a cold day when you talk or breathe, you know, the steam will come out your mouth or blow out your nose. It was doing that. But he had a low growl at that time. It was just a, you know, I could hear it. But, you know, he was just staging itself kind of. And he got really mad when I pointed that gun at him.
He noticed you at this point.
Do what?
He noticed you at this point, right, Mr. Mike?
Right. He let out a roar like a lion. I mean, I felt it down my backbone, down from my neck down. I mean, that roar was just like a lion.
He
started beating with his fist. He made fists and started beating on the side of that tree and shaking it. And I thought, oh, man, I'm done it now. So, anyway, about 75 yards, 100 yards to the northeast, a whistle come back. real shrill whistle. And he looked over that way, and then he looked back at me with a sheepish grin on his face. And he did that whistle back to whatever whistled at him. And I've heard that whistle in the woods hunting 1,000 times, and I just thought it was a bird. Well, all of a sudden, I heard bipedal movement coming from that direction over here. And he was getting froggy, you know, and I thought, man, he's called a buddy in, and they're fixing to, you know, gangbang me, you know, and I'm getting the hell out of here. And my stand was a 10-foot ladder stand, and I started down it frontwards, got about halfway, and I just jumped. You know, I was about 26 years old, 150 pounds. I could move. But that day, my legs felt like they weighed 1,000 pounds. Anyway, took out to the west, you know, back to my truck. I was a half a mile from it. And I looked over to my left, and he was flanking me. He was running about 50 feet. But he was in the woods. I was on the little, you know, logging road, and he was bulldozing brush. I mean, he was just, he was letting out loud growls and hoops and taking, just knocking limbs out of his way and just bulldozing. Man, he was, I said, man, he's mad, you know. Well, I get coming up on my truck, and something tells me, you know, when you stop to unlock that truck, he's going to nail you. You know, I mean, that's going, he's going, you know, your back's going to be to him, and he's going to nail you. Well, I got to the tailgate of my truck, and I just swung around from the hip. I didn't even aim. I just fired a shot, you know, trying to throw him off long enough that I could get the truck unlocked and get out of there. Well, the bullet went up about 7 foot in front of his face. I mean, his head was about 3 foot at that time from where the bullet hit. If he'd have been another second and a half, I believe that bullet would have got him in the head because it blew bark. I seen the bark go right from his face. I got in the truck, got it unlocked, and I was just, you know, giving it all I could give it, bullhogging it, you know, to get out of there. And I looked in my rearview mirror, and I didn't know it, but the one that he had signaled, I know it was him. He was coming up behind me on the logging road. And I had two of them chasing me. And it really screwed with me for a long time. You know, I didn't know if it was an omen coming down, sent down, or I was going to lose my mind. But it put a damper on my hunting for a little while. And I got a friend to go back there with me week two later to get my stand, and it was a heavy duty pipe stand, you know, just as strong almost as that oil field pipe they use. It was a heavy stand, and
right.
I had it chained up there with a good heavy duty chain to lock, keep somebody from stealing it, and also as a support to hold the stand, you know, on the tree.
Right.
He asked me, he said, what's wrong, why you want me to go back there with you? And I said, he says, it ain't ridden raining, you ain't gonna get stuck or nothing. I said, well, I just want somebody to go back there with me. Well, we go back there to get it, and it had been wrapped around that tree. Something had took it and completely wrapped it like a vine. It looked like a vine, and it was heavy. I mean, eight men couldn't have done it. Eight good men couldn't have took that stand and bent it around the tree. It was just that stout. I mean, it was heavy. I mean, I'd put it in the back of my pickup, back up to the tree, and get under it, get a rope with a friend, and we'd pull it up. And that's the way we would load it back in the truck. You know, we would just load it the same way. It was a technique. And but it was, and he got to look, and he said, this is weird because you couldn't get a truck in here. You couldn't drive around the stand to pull it around the tree. You couldn't get a four-wheeler in here because there's trees up by the big tree where your stand is. He said, you couldn't get a vehicle in here to do this. He said, how did this happen? I said, I don't know. And he looked at me kind of weird, like, you know, I wasn't telling the truth. But, you know, I knew that day I went in there to hunt that Saturday, December, there was nothing moving. I mean, the woods were just dead quiet. Birds weren't chirping. You know, the crows wasn't calking, and you know, squirrels wasn't moving. You know, you see squirrels in trees. It was completely dead. And
right.
I knew something was up. I knew something was going on, but I don't know what.
Well, all those things are a big indicator of when a Sasquatch is around.
Yeah, they pretty much, you know, when when I was on the sand and during all of a sudden, I mean, he was looking at me. I mean, it was, his eyes were piercing. It was like he was looking at my soul. And all of a sudden, I got real sick. I got real nauseated. My throat got real dry. I was shaking real bad. My knees were shake knocking. My teeth, I mean, old saying goes, teeth rattling, knees, you know, knocking. And I had like an electrical pulse going through my kind of above my skin over my body. I mean, it was just like something was putting a hoax on me or something, you know. I was so afraid that I wouldn't shoot him with that rifle because I thought I couldn't bring him down. I mean, he intimidated me so bad that he made me feel like that rifle was a BB gun. And, you know, he let me know, you know, if I wanted to go ahead and bring war, go ahead. But he will definitely accommodate me.
Well, I got a question for you. You said you saw the eyes. What color were the eyes?
They look from looking at him from the stand, they look black. But when I put my rifle scope on him, they look brown.
Right. I've heard that. I've heard more like an amber type color.
Right.
Well, did you feel? Now we talked the other night, Sunday night, about the incident with me with the roar. Did you feel like they were wanting to harm you, or did you feel like they were wanting to just get you out of there?
Well,
I mean, I know it was a long time ago, of course.
I know. I feel like if I wouldn't have had that rifle, if I had just been up there scouting around and all this would come about, I don't know what would have happened. I feel like that rifle saved my life because he knew that he would take a bullet, you know, if he would engage me, which he would. But
at the same time, I'm wondering if the rifle in itself isn't what set him into more of a rage.
Well, I think number one, what made it bad is I blew his food. Now, he'd been running that little deer for quite some time. Cause she was, what, I think that made it bad. I think number two, I blew his cover. I mean, he run up right on top of me, and I got you, you know. Number three, I pointed that rifle. And I think that's
right.
What really set. I think that's what set him off in a rage. His way he was looking at me with his eyes, mean as they were. You know, seeing something 8 foot tall in the woods, 400 or 500 pounds, hairy, and got a man face. That's enough to run you nuts. But his eyes is what scared me. And you know. It's hard to say. The way he was beating on that tree with his fist and shaking it, and he kept showing me his teeth. And I've talked to a lot of people about this deal, and they told me, he said, now, when he started showing you his teeth, the deal was on. He said, man, you were lucky to have got out of there alive. Matter of fact, I had a guy told me that while back on my blog. He said, you know, that that other male could have been a alpha male that was coming, and he said he would have killed you.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, you know, with Bigfoot, you know, they probably have, you know, because they're very good at, they're very elusive, and they probably come in contact or seen. Maybe the hunter didn't see it, but I'm sure these Bigfoot have seen hunters out in those woods before. And they're probably not a really big fan of them. I mean, because they were smart enough after you left to know to damage your deer stand like they did. So they obviously knew what you were up to. And they wanted to make sure you didn't see what happened.
Right, it's like I said, I think the gun really had something to do with the situation escalating, because for one, you're in their territory. Being in their territory, I think, without a weapon is one thing, but you're in their territory with a weapon. There's a risk, you know, that you can harm them or maybe even some of their young. You know, I think the gun really escalated the situation. Because I've been in areas, you know, I've seen some without any weapons, and basically it's more of a and like the other night when we had the roar, you know, it's more of a warning type thing. But I do wonder, with my incident the other night, if I would have had a gun at that close of range and that loud of a roar, if things would have been a lot worse, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. They've got some kind of power that we don't have. You know, I don't know. But one incident happened one day. I was back there hunting on my stand, and I killed a beautiful 7-point buck, beautiful rack, big deer. Boy, he was about 225 pounds. You know, I mean, awesome,
right.
Just a specimen, if you will. Okay. I checked the deer. He was right there in front of my stand, about 40 yards. You know, beautiful. One shot. Fell dead. One shot right there. So I left to go get my truck. And so I got my truck. I was gone about 15, 20 minutes. And I'll back down there to get my deer. Well, my deer's gone. Gone. I got in my truck. I said, what the hell? You know, I ain't been gone 15 minutes. And I got over there, you know, I saw where the deer bled some. There was no drag marks, no skid marks, no nothing. The deer was picked up and towed it off within 15 minutes time I could get back. Now, what do you think? What do you think happened there?
Well, I mean, it could have been a squatch. Mountain lion, they also drag off prey. But something that big, a mountain lion is usually, you know, around 150 pounds. It's possible, but to do it that quickly and get it that far away from you to where you won't even hear it looping through the forest, that's something else.
Well, there was no drag marks. No drag marks or skid marks.
Right, right. Well, there's that as well.
It was picked up. And there was no other hunters in there. Where could you went with it? I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, the way the briars and the thicket was and the thorns, I mean, whoever did it, he scooped it up and he hauled butt with it and it was gone. So that tells you right there, Squatch did that. I know he did. And he had to be watching me. He had to watch me kill that deer. And
I think
so
they do that more often than not.
You know, and I didn't see him. I didn't see him. You know, and I always cover the woods, you know, looking. And
well,
I didn't see him.
I mean, you being an avid hunter, you know, the first thing you do, most hunters do when they drop a deer or any animal for that matter is gut it. And I've heard so many tales and read so many reports and stories of the guts just vanishing, squatches, seeing Sasquatches feeding on the guts of the kill. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if, you know, they don't sit back and watch. I think that we as humans are watched and seen by Sasquatch more often than we would like to imagine.
I know we are. That's something I never would do around my deer stand. I wouldn't gut a deer because I just didn't want, you know, to leave that kind of scent, you know, and crap
right,
around there
right.
And smell and buzzards, you know. I just, it would alert other deer, you know, and I don't want to throw them off, but somebody, Scotty must have beamed that deer up, you know.
Right, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's hit Debbie into the conversation. Debbie, you're in post-production now for your movie. You can talk about that.
We are in post-production for Skookum, and really, really excited about the way it's going, and we're really proud of the production value, and we just have to add the finishing touches. We'd originally planned to have it finished by the end of October, but that was really very way too optimistic. I'll never anticipate that again with a feature film. You know, you go through these experiences and you are involved in various aspects of filmmaking and you just learn from it. I mean, it's the, you know, the school of experience here. So for Skookum 2, which we is the screenplay is in process, we will give a year post-production because that's just so much more realistic with a low-budget independent feature film. And to do it right, there are so many factors that come in when you look at the raw footage and you start putting it a rough cut together and you see the little holes, and you might not, you know, like in our case, we have to go out. As a matter of fact, we're going to try to go out this weekend and do some, with a second unit camera, we're going to do some pickup shots of Bigfoot point of view and then Bigfoot in the woods because we need a little bit more of that along with some really the cool sound effects like the whistles and the, you know, different levels of growls just to keep the tension going. And
Don't forget for the sequel, I got dibs on playing Sasquatch.
And you know what? We want to invite you out there this weekend too. Seriously, if you're in the near vicinity, we're gonna actually be doing some of these shots. So you're welcome to come on over, jump in. You can put the Bigfoot costume on, and we'll just have a party.
Where are you guys gonna be located?
Where we shot the film at the staging area, which is in the swamp off of Caddo Lake. It's actually
I seriously doubt it for this weekend, but a little bit more advance notice and I'll be there.
All right. Well, we may end up scrapping it, you know, if the weather gets bad or whatever. But right now we're planning to go out there on Saturday and spend a few hours getting these shots that we need, these simple shots, and then add the sound effects to it just to edit it in some strategic places, the places where inevitably you find little holes and you think, we could use a little bit more of this and that to really make this pop. So that's what we're doing. And we haven't sent it out there to any distributors yet. We do have some interest. We've had people contact us, but until we have a really, really, it sounds like an oxymoron when I say this, but a polished rough cut. You know, I just don't want to put it out there unless it's just at a certain level, even to distributors. But at any rate, even if we get a deal, we would like to keep control of it, maybe do a hybrid distribution deal where we are able to keep the rights to sell the DVDs and the downloads like from Vimeo and our website. So that is a given. And we'll see what happens if we have, you know, we've had some network interests like Sci-Fi, and there's so many cable channels now that, you know, we feel like we'd love to get their hands on this. So we feel like we have a lot of opportunities out there. We don't want to prematurely put it out there before it's ready. We have our test audience going right now. People can go to our website and see how to be part of our test audience. It's just a matter of just pre-ordering the Director's Cut DVD and giving us feedback on some of the clips that we're sending out. And that's kind of fun, too, because people get to feel like they're a closer part of this process, and they get their name on the credits on the film. And so we're just exploring and swimming along as we go, and it's been fun. It's been a great ride.
I bet. I mean, I love being out in the woods all together, but to be out there doing this that you love, that would be so awesome.
It is. It's like combining two of your greatest passions in life, because my passion for filmmaking and particularly the writing and development aspect was already there, you know, storytelling before I met Mike Woolley and got deep into the script and making this movie. But I'm now become an equally passionate Bigfoot research investigator. So to be able to combine those two passions and to absolutely be so excited about continuing the learning process, learning more about Bigfoot, it's just insatiable. It's like I can't get enough of it. So I'd like for my filmmaking focus in the future to be posed exclusively on the Bigfoot paranormal type of works, whether it be feature, you know, low budget independent feature films, or maybe webisode series, and that kind of thing. Just because I can't really imagine spending 4.5 years. On something that I'm just not totally engrossed in. And fortunately, because you spend too long, you're married to the subject for a long, long time, so you had better love it if you're going to make a movie about anything.
Right, right. Well, I mean, you can't go wrong, you know, when you make a movie or story regarding anything paranormal. People just eat it up, you know, they soak it up like a sponge. And you know, the thing about most of the previous Bigfoot Sasquatch films that I've seen, they've all been kind of campy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't feel like the Sasquatch has been portrayed accurately. And, you know, from what you told me previously, what I've seen, because I went and saw your trailer, and from what I've seen, you guys are really, really, really close to the mark.
We feel like we are, and Mike Woolley and I had a long chat today about our focus, because the original vision of this movie was to pay homage to the legend of Boggy Creek. I love the whole feel,
yeah,
the whole flavor. I love the way that the tension escalates with these brownish, rusty tones of the sun setting, you know, the small Gothic town, the southern flavor, even the narration part, which we have. I feel like we've captured that whole feel in Skookum. And these pressures to pull it in other directions from different factions, different people that are involved in the project, you know, like targeting or making it more this and more that, so sci-fi will buy it. You know, I just don't really feel comfortable with that. I mean, if a network wants it with what we present as our vision, which just
right,
like I described to you, then that's fine. But we're not going to conform the picture to fit some kind of a cog there in the wheel so we can make money. Because I think that we will lose our vision, and we will lose what we originally created.
I think part of the reason that The Legend of Boggy Creek still hold so much weight as opposed to other Sasquatch films that come out, because in my opinion, The Legend of Boggy Creek, it had fear, but the fear was centered around the mystery. And all the other Sasquatch films Sci-Fi Channel puts out, you know, the King Kong shot Bigfoot and all this other junk, they want to center the fear around terror or blood or just ruthlessness instead of what Bigfoot and Sasquatch really is, which is a mystery. That is the part that makes people scared. That is why Legend of Boggy Creek still holds credit, because the fear of the unknown, the fear of the possibility that this could actually, well, we know it's real, but for the viewer, the fear that this thing could actually be real and out there at any given point, that is what the Legend of Boggy Creek instilled, and that in itself is what a Sasquatch movie should instill in the viewer.
And that's why I brought Mike Woolley on board this project, because when I heard his story, I knew it was absolutely 100% true. I knew that in my bones. And I wanted him to play basically his own role in the movie, his own name, because, again, that lends that flavor of authenticity, just like Legend of Boggy Creek. Most of those people they used in there were not actors or stand-ins. They were the real deal, the people that had experienced it. And I think there's something about that truth that comes through on a film. It doesn't matter what the production value is. It's just that truth comes through, and it grabs you by the jugular, and you just never forget it. It changes your life.
I would rather watch something like that than watch an actor portraying someone that went through something like that, or for example, on the Finding Bigfoot those shows, a reenactment. I would rather watch the real, true people sharing their real, true stories from their point of view.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's like, you know, I watch Ghost Hunters, I watch Ghost Adventures, those shows, they're okay. You know, it's entertainment. But the one show that I love, and out of all, even scary movies that I watch, this one show gives me the creeps more than anything else that I've seen. It's a show called Paranormal Witness. The thing that creeps me out the most is the fact that it's the real people telling their true stories. Because there's not that margin for error, if you will, where something could be added to it,
right?
You know, to sensationalize it. There's none of that. These people are just sitting down in the chair, telling what happened to them, just like Mr. Mike did at the opening of the show. To me, that in itself is more creepy and more terrifying and fearful than any special effects or any Hollywood twist on the paranormal story.
Right.
Well,
right. I totally agree.
Part of the reason with or part of the problem with those shows is though it's the dramatization that they do about what's going on, that it just creates so much, like, if you will, it has nothing to do with just the paranormal. It has to do with the crypto and the UFO and abductions and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's over the top reactions.
And
it's sensationalized.
That's why there's a lot of problem in when you start to get into this field. There's a lot of crap that people look at it and be like, "Oh, yeah, there's no way."
Yeah, I mean, in a way, yes, it's good that they're getting people interested in it, but they're also discrediting what we as investigators do.
Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, truthfully there, and Kevin and I were talking about this before the show, there has been a significant decline in paranormal and crypto and all of those shows where it was pretty much every night you could turn it on and there was something. Whether it be Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, Paranormal State, Ghost Lab. I mean, there's so many that went by the wayside. And it definitely is on a decline.
Well, from a business, I can see from a business aspect, I mean, no one wants to watch the reality of paranormal investigating, where you go to a location and you're sitting there for hours and there's nothing going on. No one wants to watch that week after week after week. So they have to throw in a little drama, a little excitement. You know, if it wasn't for that, you know, people would have lost interest in the show a long time ago and the ratings would have dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even the ones, the shows that are still left, the ratings are dropping. Even the ones that have been on for a decade plus, the ratings are dropping. So it's, I think the problem with the Hollywood end of it is more the portrayal than, you know, from a production standpoint, they're searching, they're grasping.
Well, you know, I know a lot of paranormal investigators, Matt, who are only doing this so they can go Hollywood, and they think they're going to have their own television show and all this and that, this and that. And I tell them, I say, look, by the time you reach that level where you can have a television show, if you have a television show, people are no longer going to be interested in it because we're going to be so saturated with these paranormal shows that you're basically striving, you know, by that time, you know, people will lose interest in the paranormal show. So the chances of you making it big, quote unquote, doing your paranormal thing are very slim. You need to do it because you love doing it, or to help people, something along that those aspects. If you're doing it to get
absolutely
rich, then you know you're doing it for the wrong reason.
No, well, you end up compromising yourself, you know, and diluting the project, and then there's no value that comes out of it. You know, I mean.
That's right. That's right.
Now, Debbie, you know, you have Mike that you consult with. Have you talked to many different people that have had encounters with this thing? You know, to try to make it as accurate as possible when trying to portray Bigfoot in your movie.
Oh, absolutely. We actually went to the Texas Bigfoot Research Conservancy conference back in October 2010 in Tyler, Texas. We on video, we actually interviewed Bob Gimlin, the Patterson-Gimlin tapes.
Wow.
We have that interview, which we're going to we've got those on YouTube. But I think we're going to put them together and put them as extras on the Director's Cut DVD. We're going to put all these interviews that we did at that conference. So
we
interviewed quite a few people, including, you know, Mike Woolley has been the most – his first interview there with our Skookum poster in the background was the most popular interview so far. But we have these others that we're going to put on there. And plus – I accompanied Mike along with Jim Lansdale to Central Louisiana to do some research investigation with these two women who lived way out in the country and had been pretty much by themselves. One was a widow, and the other's husband works offshore, and they had been terrorized by Bigfoot in the area. And so we went to research that, and that was eye-opening. We got actual, roar, growl recordings when we put tape recorder on top of the chicken house there. When I spent the night there, I woke up in the middle of the night to a roar that sounded like an African lion, which was terrifying and paralyzing. And we actually had some other experiences there, too, with seeing one in the daylight as we were doing some filming. And,
it looked like
a Bigfoot. And then when we got closer, it just disappeared. So there opens all these aspects to, okay, do they have this infrasound and ultrasonic capability that they've developed so that they can render themselves invisible? And I tend to think so, because other animals have that capability, and I think they can probably turn it on and off, and when it's not turned on, that's when people have sightings like Mike in the Woods. They're not on. They're not anticipating having to have that, you know, radar, quote, quote, on. So, you know, people see them from time to time. But I think that
I certainly think they can. We are talking about the most elusive creature on the planet. As far as having some type of cloaking, that I don't know. I just think they're really good at what they do. You know, they've been here for, you know, ages, and they're just really good at hiding and blending in and disappearing.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. So
yeah,
whatever it is they have, they are awfully good at it. You know, but
yeah, I mean,
not good enough because they are seeing. So there's that factor too, and they do leave tracks.
Yeah, and they've been seen way back when a lot of this area was inhabited with just Indians.
Right.
Numerous Indian tribes talk about Bigfoot, Sasquatch in their cultures, and so. Yeah, they probably more likely were here before any human being was walking this land over here. Or, and of course, you know, there's sightings all across the world in different countries, you know, various groups of Bigfoot.
Personally, I believe they were on this planet long before any humans were on the planet.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Very possible.
Yeah. So they got a lot of practice on being elusive.
And developing parts of their brain even that we haven't developed. I mean, we've taken off in a different direction in the development of our, you know, neocortex, you know, the new part of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps what? Sasquatch has developed a different part of their brain. But we only use 10% of ours, you know, even with that new brain.
You have to look at it like this also. They don't eat the crap that we eat. They don't inhale the toxic stuff that we inhale, you know, from cigarettes to just everything that we use on a daily basis. I mean, they're out there in the woods, you know, living the good life, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And breathing more pure air with all the oxygen from the vegetation, you know.
Their food is probably 100 times more healthy than ours.
Absolutely.
Matt, did you have something to say?
No, I'm good. I'm just enjoying the conversation.
Oh, okay. Mike, I got a question for you. After you had that initial encounter, you talked about you know, that deer disappearing. Did you see them on other occasions after that? And you know, when you did see them, were you a little bit more skittish? You know, did that fear kick back in after that initial encounter with one? You know, if you saw them again. Did that fear come back?
Well, the second time I seen them, I've seen some sneaking through the woods about 150 yards from a deer stand. And the way I had this deer stand built, I had it built up in trees. I found like four trees growing together, going straight up about 30 feet. And I just went up there and built a box. And covered it in Spanish moss, and I used railroad spikes nailed inside the tree to climb up. You could not see that stand. I've had people squirrel hunting come into my stand and talk, and didn't know I was up there. But yeah, I saw the creatures sneaking through the woods. Nothing come over me. A kind of alert kind of went off in me. Because I had to go back out the way they come through. I mean, they were heading west, crossing over this old road, and I had to go back out that way to my truck. And, you know, yeah, I was kind of skittish, you know, I was hoping they had just went on wherever they were going. It was a big male and I think a female or a juvenile. They were very cautious, you know, looking around and the way they walked, the way they stepped. They'd move up to a tree, stand there for a while, look around and move up to another tree. Very cautious. I saw one time he had him a game plan where he had, there was this really, really big cedar tree that I had to come in. It was in the growed into the road there. The middle of the road is overgrown and wasn't traveled no more. But the tree was humongous, big tree, a big cedar tree I've ever saw in my life. And one day, about 12 o'clock, you know, I'm looking that way north, and that tree pointing south, it just opened up, and out he come. Well, you know, big 7-footer, 8-footer, and that blew my mind. And that upset me. I kind of got upset when I saw that because he left and went a little west, and, I was kind of worried. Well, anyway, that morning I come by there about 5:30. I always got early on the stand, and I walked within 5 feet of him. But I used to jump turkeys. It would really scare me real bad. Turkeys would get in that cedar tree and roost. And, you know, 5:30 in the morning, some mornings, it would just make them spook them. And, man, all I would hear is feathers and gobbling. And, man, it just make you almost, you know what I mean. And, but anyway, after I saw that he was gone, I waited a couple of hours, about 2:30. And on my way out, I walked over to where he'd come out of that tree. And I wanted to see what was going on. He had broke him some limbs in that tree. You know, the limbs was going all the way down, probably 3 foot off, you know, the bottom of the, from the ground, you know, and overhanging and touching the ground at the end of the limb. And he'd got him some limbs where he could get in there and be comfortable. And I saw two big, humongous butt prints on the ground. And on the right side was a big, humongous stack of turkey feathers, meticulously stacked. On the left side was a big, big pile of bones, turkey bones, and they were stacked just like the turkey feathers, meticulously. What he was doing, he was getting in that tree and hiding out and waiting for those turkeys come in there to roost, and he was tagging them. Man, he had a game plan. He had to figure it out. And, I kind of left that area. And I said, you know, I didn't, you know, I felt like one day, you know, me and him might have to, you know, tango, and I didn't want no more of it. I mean, they, you know, they can have the woods, you know. I used to think I was king of the woods with that high-powered rifle, but, they taught me right quick who owns the woods, you know.
When was the last time you have been hunting, Mr. Mike?
Ooh, it's been several years. It was in the 90s, the early 90s, and that was it. I mean, I pretty much hung it up. You know, I bought some new guns a while back, and I ain't even tried them out, you know.
Is that due to all this?
What was that?
I said, is that in part due to all of this with the Bigfoot activity and the sightings?
Right. I tried to hunt after that, but I just couldn't be comfortable in the woods. Any little twig would break or a limb would break, or you know how squirrels sometimes they'll ride down a limb and break it, you know. I just freak out. And I caught myself looking for Bigfoots. I wasn't watching a deer. I was kind of looking around to see where, you know, maybe where one of them is, you know. And I said, you know, this ain't no good. You know, you're supposed to be enjoying yourself, and I used to love being in the woods, you know, especially in the fall, the winter, you know, the leaves turning, smelling the air, you know, how the trees put the smell off, you know, and it smells so good, so fresh, you know, it kind of energizes you. All that was gone, you know, because I knew that there was a creature out there that could be very deadly. And I knew, you know, face it, you know, they come take your deer, you shoot a deer down, and, you know, he comes up there and just walks up there and says, hey, you know, he takes your deer and walks off. Hey, man, that's gutsy. You got to, that's pretty gutsy. And, you know, like I said, they kill cows. I've got a lot of cows killing cows, breaking their necks, twisting their heads off. They catch deer. And you know how fast a deer is. A deer can move. And if you're, you know, you're able to catch a deer, tell me, you know, what chance does a human have, you know, against trying to run away from one of these things? It's in bull elk. They break the necks on a big 1,000, 1,500 pound elk up in the mountains, you know, to right. kill them, you know. And, you know, you just, that's just some awesome strength, you know. You know, like that hog guy over there on Spine River a few years ago baited some hogs. And one morning when it got daylight, you know, where he could see, he saw a Sasquatch standing over away out in front of his stand, you know, and she was watching those hogs. And he's sneaking up on them, you know, how I said. And all of a sudden, he said she just made a big long leap, landed and made a hoop, you know, scared him, landed in the middle of them. Slapped one up against a tree, and he bounced off the tree. And when he come back down, she grabbed him, got on top of him, and he said every time she hit him in the head with her fist, he said he could hear the bones crack. Now, you know how hard a hog's head is.
Yes,
and every time she hit him, she cracked his head. Well, she killed him, picked him up, put him over her shoulder. It was a female. He's got a climbing stand. He's up probably 20 feet, 25 feet. He said she walked over to him, right under him, looking up at him. Said she threw that hog down on the ground and stared at him for a couple minutes. You know, like, if you want some, come get some. And she picked the hog back up, walked under the stand, and went on, you know, about her business. And he said he heard another one, some hoops, down from there, hollering back. And he said he was getting down out of the tree, and his buddy, who was a half a mile down, heard it. And said he had his stuff together and was coming back to get in the boat to leave. So, I mean, they're pretty pretty tough creature. I think a lot of farmers losing calves and stuff like that and never find them. I think they've, been dabbling in that.
Well, it's like I said earlier and Sunday night on that broadcast as well. I believe they're around humans a lot more than we realize, and I really think that if they really wanted to harm us, it would happen more often, and there would be nothing we could do about it. Do I believe that they could be territorial, especially when it comes to food? Oh yes, of course. Yeah, it's like with the roar that I heard, it scared the crap out of us, and it shook me up for a few days. And for a few days after that, you know, every time I was near the woods, I'd always kind of be like you. Every little sound, you jump, you turn, you look, you know, looking over your shoulder. But coincidentally, at the same time, I have this urge to hear it again. You know, I have even the years ago, the two that I've seen, I have this desire to see it again. because I think even though I knew it couldn't have been any other predatory animal, the conclusion ultimately was a Bigfoot or Sasquatch. You still kind of have those doubts in your head, you know. Okay, well, I want to see what that sound was. I want to see what made that sound.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Okay, that night, say y'all were out there doing what you did, and you realize, I think we talked about it, that you were probably within 40, 50 yards of the creature, somewhere like that.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. No
okay,
doubt.
What would you have done? What would you have done if you would have blinked your eyes and all of a sudden he's standing there looking at you about 10 foot away from you, something 500, 600 pounds, 8 foot tall, burning red eyes, showing you his teeth, bowing up. Now, what would you have done?
There would be nothing I could have done other than you know, submit and cower and you know, let him know, hey, you're in charge of this situation.
Yeah, it's a different. It brings a different aspect. I think if a lot of people had the kind of encounter I had, you know, you didn't know if you were going to live or die. You'd have a different way of thinking about these things.
I agree.
I have a high respect for them. I'll tell you right now, I respect them. I have a high respect for them, and I'm not going to bother them. If I had cows, and you know what happened to that lady with her calf? They broke in the barn and twisted the cow's neck off, big cow, and were taking a calf. Now, if I'd have been out there at night with my shotgun and rifle, I'd have cut down. I mean, because I'm not going to put up with you stealing my livestock. You're taking food off my table. You hurt me, cost me money. As far as them, if they had wanted to live on my land, that's fine. I ain't got a problem with that. You know, get back there, back in the pasture, in the woods somewhere, do your thing. I ain't going to bother you, okay? No problem at all. But, you know, just don't kill my livestock, you know?
Right. Well, and it's like we said earlier. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, here is one question I have, and I see this on shows. I hear people talking about it. If you're out there, and my perfect example, so what kind of equipment are you using for hunting? Like, when this happened, what kind of rifle were you using?
I had just a 270.
Yeah.
But I started to bring it, and I did. I had a 7mm Magnum, and that would make that. We've set targets up at 100 yards, and a friend of mine was sighting my rifle in. He's gone now. His name was Wayne Easton. That was my hunting buddy. Out of Manny, Louisiana, he killed a 53-point buck. He was the man. His wife is still lives down there, Martha Easton. We love her. She's a good friend of ours. But we were sighting those rifles in.
Did you say a 53-point buck?
53, yes, indeed, 53.
Holy cow.
I've never even heard of that.
Wayne lived about 3 miles from where my sighting was. And also, Wayne killed we hunted in the game reserve, you know, which was Louisiana state-owned land. It was awesome deer, a lot of points, a lot of calcium, you know, deposits. But we were setting those rifles up, and he was shooting. I was setting targets at 100 yards, okay? And I would get off away from the tree, you know. I was looking at the tree, but I was a good piece from it. And, you know, when he'd shoot, he'd tear the target up, and I'd go put another one up. Well, that 270, when he's 100 yards from me, and I'm looking at the tree, he would pull the trigger, and it'd go boom, boom, And then all of a sudden, the bullet would hit the tree. You know, and that was it, okay? And this is a big old, big sweet gum tree. Pretty good-sized tree. Well, he shot the 7-millimeter Magnum. And all of a sudden, it was boom, and that target flew off that tree, and that bullet come out of that tree on the other side. I seen it go through it, come out the other side. And that 270 would, that 270 would barely go in. You know, I would have been a lot more comfortable with that Magnum rifle than that 270 that day. I mean, I don't
think that's what I hunt with, 270. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I don't think
the reason I'm asking is because the only thing that I hunt is flying clay. I just trap shoot. I don't hunt. And my 12-gauge is only good for, you know, a certain distance depending on what round I'm using. But I think in a survival situation that so many people find themselves in, if they're terrified and you're a hunter, I still don't get why it hasn't been that somebody hasn't dropped one and shoot first, ask questions later.
Well, if you've ever seen one, like Mr. Mike said earlier, the similarities to a human, that alone is one thing. Now, mind you, there are people out there trying to shoot one and wanting to shoot one, but see, I believe that these beings are just too smart.
Yeah,
I believe,
and, you know, there are claims out there. One gentleman claimed to have shot a young one, a youth, a baby.
That's Justin. Justin Smeha.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know Justin. Me and Justin. I talked to Justin Sunday night for a length, and we talked about a bunch of things. And he was telling me about some different things. Yeah, he shot a juvenile.
Yeah. You know, and even in his case, from his story, you know, when he walked up on it and it was, you know, bleeding and whatnot, and it resembled a human so much, it scared the hell out of him, and he said he buried it, you know?
Right.
You know, the whole story's been covered up. I mean, if I remember correctly, I remember reading that he sent DNA samples, and they basically swept it under the rug and lied and claimed it was something else other than a Sasquatch.
Mm. Well, you know, the government, you know why the government don't want nothing to do with them, don't you? They'd have to pay them Social Security benefits.
I was
going to
say, they don't pay taxes.
Yeah, well, the government don't want to have anything to do with them because they can't control them.
Yeah. Well, getting back to killing one, the thing about if you shot one in the woods, okay, you wouldn't get him out of the woods because the rest of them in those woods would pile in or own you. You'd be a dead man. You would be a dead man. You'd have about a dozen of them. They'd boil in or own you. They're very family oriented. They cover each other's back. I mean, and trust me, if you see one in the woods, I'll bet you everything I own that he's got a buddy with him. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And you ain't gonna get him out of the woods. Now, if you got the National Guard there with about probably 100 guns, you might do it. But
well, there's also the whole ethical aspects of it. For example, if you were to shoot and kill a Sasquatch, and it's 100% proven, you bring in the body, and it's proven that this creature is a hominid and a relative of man, Homo sapiens, then guess what? You just committed homicide.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're going to have a lot of people on your butt. I mean, you're going to have all the game wards. You're going to have the state that you killed it in. Then the government's going to get involved. You're going to have a hornet nest stirred up.
Well, not only that, but
what it really
comes down to, the hunting business, makes so much money. The hunting business makes so much money that for people to think there's something out there that we need to be afraid of, that would drastically change that business.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that, and with the last statement, not the hunting thing, but before that about having the game wardens and having, you know, the state and all that stuff, if you're face-to-face with one of these, that's not going to be going through your head.
Yeah.
And you're not going to think, oh, you know what, I could drop him, but I'm going to have to deal with the game wardens and the state. This is such an elusive creature that science has and then doesn't and then has and then doesn't recognize, which I could get the proof right now. No, you're not. I mean, it's going to go more into survival mode.
But at the same time, any hunter knows, most hunters are not just going to shoot something just to shoot it. You know, unless that creature is a threat. Me personally, you know, I don't just shoot something because I see it. You know, I either shoot it for the food aspect or as a threat.
But if you think about it, Matt, it's kind of just like us in the paranormal. You know, if you're walking down a hallway and a full body apparition appears in front of you, and you don't have your camera right in your hand or whatnot, your first instinct is not to, oh, I need to get a video or a shot of this. You're dumbfounded. You know, your body's looking at it, and you're going, what in the hell is that? You know, and everything
That's
else
right.
goes out of the book. And it's the same thing in the world, even with hunters, because they know what they know the animals that are out there. And then all of a sudden they come across something that they have never seen before in their life. Their first instinct's not to shoot it. Their first instinct is to try to figure out what the hell it is. So they're going to
exactly
look at
right.
It's just, well, that's how human nature is. When we see something for the first time that we've never seen before, our brain is trying to figure out what the hell it is. So unless it charges right at you, you know, then maybe you might pull out your gun and shoot it. But if it's just moving through the woods, you're not going, oh, man, it's a Bigfoot, I'm going to shoot it, unless you're one of those people that are out there trying to kill one. But
exactly.
somebody that's out there hunting hogs or deer or whatever it might be, or just camping or, you know, their first instinct is go, what in the hell is that, you know? Is that somebody in the I just think that's the way our body is set up, because I've done it in the paranormal, you know, with ghost hunting. I've seen stuff happen right in front of me, and I'm not even thinking about the camera or my video camera or any of that, you know. I'm just like, what in the hell's going on here, you know. And then after the fact, you're like, damn it, I didn't get that on film.
No, and I definitely agree with that. But
it's over with.
You know, you know as well as I do, Kevin, that there's, and everybody who's still on air, I don't see everybody.
Yeah.
I don't know. My phone froze, that's why. But, I mean, there has to be not even one, okay, let's cancel it down to one jackass that goes out there with his weapon every weekend, goes out to a forest, and tries to find one of these things to kill to get his, probably, I don't know, about 15 seconds, maybe 25 minutes of fame. I'm doing it. And, okay, not even shoot with a weapon, but, you know, have a GoPro, have, you know, a stealthy position or, you know, something. There's such a lack of I guess you can say, proven evidence that,
well, you know,
there's so much, there's more bullshit you have to weed through than actually something that's intelligible and.
Well,
that
these
is
things
true.
Are small. These things are smart because I'm pissed that I missed out on the the Bigfoot hunt that I was supposed to go on with the Bigfoot team down in Conroe, Texas. They have a forest they go to, a national forest, and they have a specific area that they always go to and set up camp because they keep getting recordings of the creature. They've gotten footprints, all kinds of evidence and sightings of it. And, of course, they don't tell anybody where they go. Well, I was supposed to go with them last time, and they had game cameras set up, you know, in various spots around their tents. And I'll be damned if they didn't wake up the next morning and there was Bigfoot prints up by one of the tents. And it eluded the cameras. It found a spot where the cameras couldn't pick it up, and it was still inside the camp up on a tent, you know, right next to the tent and left print. And they didn't get any photographs of the thing. So these things are highly intelligent, you know, and if somebody is trying to shoot them, you actually think that a Bigfoot is going to get out in the open field where somebody can get a clear shot? They're going to be moving amongst trees, so to get a clean shot on one of these things, it would be really tough. Plus, we don't really know, you know, just like a deer, you could shoot a deer and the sucker will take off running and run for miles, and you have to track it, and it still may not have killed it, you know? So,
well, Mr. Mike, you were a hunter yourself, and I know you can attest to this. When you're out in the woods, you as a human, you know when someone else is out there. You know when someone else is on your territory. You just get that feeling, and for most part, humans don't even try to be quiet when they go out there. So there's no doubt in my mind that these creatures know when we're there.
Is that directed to me?
Yeah, Mr. Mike.
Oh, okay, yeah. You're correct. I've been in the woods before walking. And I would hear something, a bipedal taking steps. You know, it was like if I took five or six steps, it took five or six steps. And
yep.
And same on. And I would look, and I would look, and I would look, and I would look all the way around me and just and take my time and slow down and look, you know, because I didn't know what it was. I had sticks thrown at me. I had rocks thrown at me, big limbs.
You know when something else is out there.
I mean, I got down. I said, you know what? If I can't see you standing up, I got down on my belly, flat on the ground, and I said, I'll see your feet, okay? And I looked that way, and still, I couldn't see him. I got up off the ground, walked about another 10 feet. Bam! Boy, here come a big limb right out front of me. You know, that's to say, hey, got you. You know. Yeah, I think they play games with you, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I think they, you know, he was probably trying to deter me from going any further. He didn't want me to go any further. But, you know, you name it. Yeah, they know. They know when you're in the woods. They can smell, you know, just like a deer. You know,
mm-hmm.
A deer, you know, a lot of my friends would tell me, I went deer hunting, and I didn't see nothing. I did this and I did that. Well, you know what?
Yep.
That deer could have picked you up 1,000 yards from there. He could have
That's
greeted
right.
you. And when he got that, buddy, he's gone. But, and then that way, you never saw nothing. That's why you didn't see nothing. He picked you up. Well, you know they can smell.
Well,
so,
here's the thing. You know, it goes back to what I said earlier. I truly believe that if we humans lived out in the woods our whole lives, that we would have that acute sense of smell as well. But, I mean, just think of everything that we are inhaling and breathing and smelling on our normal, everyday basis. You know, I think the way we live as humans has hampered some of those traits. Now, this thing has lived out in the, has existed out in the clean, fresh air all along, so naturally it's going to have a more acute sense of smell than we would.
Mm-hmm. I read some stories one time from some Indians up in, you know, the Pacific Northwest. I know if you've ever been fishing or fished with anybody, you know how hard it is, you know, those nets that they put out in the water to catch fish. The fish swim into them and the gills get hung and they can't. Well, you know how hard it is to put out those nets. I mean, they get hung up pretty good. The Indians up in the Pacific Northwest said at nighttime, the Bigfoot would come in there, and they would wade out in the rivers and steal fish out of their nets. Now, I'm going to tell you something. That's pretty slick. Order to take a fish from the net, you know.
Yeah, especially a hoop net like that, yeah. Well, you know, here's another thing we have to look at. You know, I mean, I don't blame them from hiding, you know, from us. Now, if you look back in history, the Native Americans had more interaction with them than, and it all kind of dwindled off once, you know, us Europeans, the settlers came. But think about what the European settlers were doing. They were tracing in with all these guns and weapons And I mean, look what they did to the Native Americans. It's no wonder these things went into hiding.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. The Native Americans, they looked at them in a different way. They, I was told that they tried to friend them, you know, and they couldn't trust them, you know. Like I said, they would give them stuff and try to trade with them, but they couldn't do it because they couldn't trust them. They would come in at night and steal the fish out of their nets. They would come to their where they used to smoke their salmon and stuff, and they would steal them. So you know, they said that they just couldn't trust them, and they were afraid of them, you know.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they have a maybe the Sasquatch have a different aspect on,
but
you know, if it's of the earth, it's for everyone, you know.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I think that in different parts and different areas, you have some that's more aggressive than
right.
the other areas. You know, we were talking about the other night. I understand the ones down here in our area are real aggressive. So there was a guy talking in Pennsylvania here. I was listening to him not long ago, and he was talking about how he got run out of the woods. Well, he was telling about this thing happened a few years ago in Pennsylvania, where I think it was on three different occasions, maybe a year apart or a couple years apart, they found hunters that was their bodies were tore up real bad, and they were thrown up in a fork of a tree about 15, 20 foot off the ground, and said their rifles were beat up against the tree, tore up. Their rifles were tore up. Now, this happened to two or three hunters over a period of 5 years. Now, how did their bodies get 15, 20 feet up the fork of a tree? Now, this was a true story. I listened to it. I mean, the guys did a radio interview, and the radio guy said, yeah, I remember reading that. I remember, you know, so... the rifles were beat up, destroyed, you know, against the tree, and bodies were just mangled and thrown up in a fork of a tree. Now,
yeah, because even a mountain lion can't drag a human up into a tree. As far as large cats, the only one that I know of that can do it is a leopard.
I will fully disagree with that, to be honest with you.
Okay.
a mountain lion's actual lifting, they don't normally go up into trees, but there are certain ones that do. It depends on how territorial the other mountain lions in the area are, that they don't want them to get to their kill. But they can drag up to 350 pounds up into a tree.
Are you sure about
that? Yes. Yes. I watch a lot of Animal Planet. That is an actual true fact. Is a 200-pound mountain lion can drag a 350-pound carcass up into a tree?
Well, that mountain lion, I don't think a mountain lion can take a rifle and beat it up against a tree. You know, something did that, and I'm wondering if one of those hunters took a shot at one, you know, and pissed him off or hit him. And some more come in there and, you know, they'll grab him up, scoop him up, and get him out of there, and then they come back and whoop some ass, you know?
Yeah. That's true. Well, we're getting down to the last 8-9 minutes of the show. I'll start with Miss Debbie. You said you're in post-production. When do you think kind of timetable you'll be able to get the movie out?
I think at this point there is a good possibility we could have a release by late spring, early summer, barring any unforeseen problems with the very end of the editing.
Very nice. And what's the website everybody can go to if they want to pre-order one?
It's Skookum, Skookum, the movie, themovie.com. And then we've got a Facebook fan page with the same, you know, Facebook/ Skookum the movie. We've got an IMDb page. And on the website, Mike Woolley has a blog page, which I think that the listeners may very well enjoy, and he'll interact with them, answer any questions they have extensively on his blog site. We've also got the Skookum store, which we have, you know, the DVD pre-sales, where I was talking about earlier, where people, if they purchase it, they get a $5 discount off what the movie will be. Right now it's $15, plus they get some extra perks, like they get these clips. We've got an 11-minute clip of special scenes from the movie with the musical score, and they can we send it to them on a closed YouTube link, and they get to give opinions about it. Plus they immediately get their name put on the credits, the end credits of the film, special thanks, and on IMDb page, on our Skookum IMDb page, and then the Facebook credit roll and the website credit roll. So they get to be part of it and see their name in lights.
Nice. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to check the movie out when it comes out. I love these type of movies, and being a theater boy and an avid movie fan, yeah, I'll definitely be watching it.
Well, great. We're excited, and again, we're just staying true. We're not going to be pulled in 20 different directions. We're staying true to our original vision. And I told Mike, if we sell two copies and those two people are happy with it, then we've done something right. So, but I think that as much effort as we put into it, I feel that it's going to be well received. I do feel that. And that we hold respect for the creature.
Oh, yeah, right. Definitely. And, Mike, as she had mentioned, you have a blog on the website.
Right. I got a blog. And if anybody wants to, just go to skookumthemovie.com, and you'll see my Bigfoot with me and send me a question or whatever, and I'll be glad to talk to you and everything.
Well, thanks so much to you two for talking to us again.
Thank you for having us. It was really so much fun and great conversation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a change of pace to talk about Bigfoot instead of talking about ghosts all the time.
Yeah, we've got people as far away as Norway and Sweden listening in tonight.
Right. That is awesome.
I've got friends over there listening in, Norway, Sweden, Australia, all over the globe listening in tonight. I send the link to your show, and Tron and Bonnie Ocean over there, and I've got a cousin, Dane Woolley, and my sister Patty Woolley Spouting listening in, and I just want to let you know we really appreciate you, and we enjoyed talking to you, and we look forward to Thursday night.
All right. And
I look forward to Thursday night as well, Mr. Mike. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You guys be careful.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Definitely. Debbie, we may try to get you and Mike back on later in the year after the movie's been released and talk about how it's been going.
Oh, absolutely. We'd love to be on again.
Okay. Well, you guys have a good night.
Well, you too, and take care.
Good right. Night, guys.
Okay.
Good night. Be safe.
Yeah.
Good night.
All right. Another good Bigfoot conversation. And, you know, I haven't seen one yet, but I know it's very possible that they could be out there, you know. It's tough. I know Matt has a hard time trying to comprehend it.
Yeah, well, it's partially due to the lack of forest in the Chicago suburbs.
if you were down in this area, I was going to say that earlier in the show, Brian's in Mississippi, and Mike's in Louisiana, and I'm in Texas. And you're way the hell up there.
Yes, like I told you the other night, Matt. You ever get down here, I'll make a believer out of you.
I love to do it just to see, and it would put a lot of questions to bed for me.
Yeah.
You know, if there was anything like quote unquote encounter that happened. But
Matt, I have to correct you if I can.
Sure.
All right, I sent you an image, and I also sent you a link. Mountain lions do not drag prey in the trees. A leopard does, but a mountain lion won't.
Yeah, no, hold on 1 second. Yeah, it just popped through. I just got the link. So. No, there's certain cases to where it has happened. It's not a natural thing for the species, but that it was on what the hell was it? National
Man,
Geographic.
You have to stop
Island.
Watching TV and actually get outdoors, buddy.
It was Nat Geo Wild where they were comparing a lot of the big cats, like lions excluded, but. In more of the same, like, medium-sized species, and they were talking about habits, and they were talking about certain environments and certain situations, and that's when they did the test.
Well, I could see if it was a smaller animal, but something the size of a human. I mean, realistically, only a leopard has the jaw power and the upper body mass and strength to do something like that. Now, who's to say that... That we don't have wild leopards here and there, you know.
Yeah.
Which has been an account that they are, they've been coming up from South America and Mexico, which they've found those in Arizona and New Mexico and a lot of the southern states where they have been finding leopards and there's a panther hybrid that's out there that's that's been around. So I don't know where – I haven't looked at the link yet because we're still doing the show, but –
Right, right.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out. I saw the confirmed
show
thing.
It wasn't to embarrass you or anything like that. You know, I just wanted to make sure you had that knowledge and, you know.
Yeah, no, I know that. I put it this way. I wouldn't have made the comment if it wasn't something that I've heard a few times. If it was just one thing or one show that I was watching at one point, I wouldn't have brought it up, but that's not how I work.
No. everybody makes mistakes. nobody's perfect.
Yeah, Matt will call me out.
I appreciate you guys having me on, and Matt, I assume that you're going to give me a call in on Thursday on my show as well, right?
Oh yeah, Dennis and I will both be joining you.
Great. Do your homework in the meantime.
Yes, I will.
And just a reminder to everybody, a quick plug for next Sunday. It will be the 3-year anniversary of the URN radio show and the URN radio network. It's where it all began with Jeff and I 3 years ago. So we're going to have all the hosts from all the shows on the network on air, and we'll just be hanging out and talking about whatever we decide to talk about.
Oh, it's going to be
Brian,
a blast, I'm sure. Yeah, Bob.
Yeah, Brian, I don't know if you've been able to join any of or listen to any of the full network involvement shows.
As of yet. I'm a newbie.
I don't know if you've listened in the past, but I will tell you this.
That's virgin territory for me so far.
Sunday, go to confession. Get your soul cleared, because you're going to have to do it tenfold by the next Sunday after being on the show with all of us.
Oh, yeah. We break in all the newbies, too. I'll have to entertain y'all too, because see, it's our 3-year anniversary, so I got to do it at some point in the show. I got to make fun of my best friend Jeff, who's my co-host. We've been doing this so long, so there'll be some comedy going in. We'll be making fun of him.
I hear you. I guess I'm gonna have to record a few of my shows for Sunday night.
if you're going to shit talk, it's going to have to be an A game.
Yeah.
this will be for me about a year and a half, and we've done a few different anniversary shows. So
yeah
it gets crazy, man. I'm not gonna lie.
Okay, well, what is the rating on this show?
It's no holds bar. That's the rating.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah, that should be real fun.
There isn't a letter in the alphabet. We've tried X, we've tried R, we've tried NC-17, but no, it all depends. Everybody kind of brings it out, and it can get bad, I should say.
But anyway, that's what we got going on. But everybody tune in tomorrow. Mr. Matt and Dennis will be on Full Spectrum Radio at 8:00. And then Thursday.
Yeah, I gotta call in and give them hell, payback.
Yeah. And then Thursday, Brian and Onyx Knight's Paranormal Radio, they'll be talking Bigfoot once again. So tune in for
their
show.
Yes, sir.
Yes, and Dennis and I will be there for that. So,
well, I'm gonna have Mike and Debbie on as well.
Oh, okay.
On that show too. So, I want to try to let them get a little bit of their story out before we start going crazy.
Well, shit, that's, yeah, three nights in a week, that's almost, you know what, I'm going to contact them. I'll have them on tomorrow night, too. What the hell?
I'm sure they would appreciate the publicity.
Oh, yeah.
And for both of you guys, I have no idea what the hell is going on for tomorrow because the guest that we had lined up canceled yesterday afternoon.
Matt, you have no idea what's going on any other time.
That's true also. But no, Dennis and I are trying to get a...
10 minutes later, Kevin got the joke.
Yeah, I know, right? He's probably in the middle of doing something else.
Yeah.
He's like, we're an archive. I don't give a shit anymore.
Oh, man. Well, if you need some airtime, Phil, just hit me up. I'll call in or whatever, give you and Dan. I haven't talked to Dennis in a while, so.
Yeah, it definitely has been a while. I think we might actually switch it to, or switch gears and go something completely not paranormal and go with a contractor show to where you're talking about.
Well, you know, hey, man, you could do like I do every once in a while, just have an open mic show and let people call in and talk about whatever the hell they want to talk about, you know?
Yeah, I've done that, and there's been a couple. Every time I advertise an open mic show, I get the same people that call in, and they can't even keep a train of thought or a conversation going, and they'll rant for like 5 minutes, then you ask them a question, then they're silent for 5 minutes. So... That's what's happened on the open mic shows that we've had.
Are they related to you, Matt?
Oh, come on.
you kind of do the same thing.
Well, no, I'll sit there and you know what? I don't have the education about Bigfoot. I know.
Hey,
a lot
I'm just
of stuff
messing with you, man. It's all love. You know what I'm saying?
No, I know.
I'm just giving you a hard time. Yeah, you gave me a hard time last Thursday, so I owe you.
Yeah, well, wait till this Thursday.
I'm ready for it. I've been taking my vitamins, buddy. Saying my prayers, brother.
All right, well, we're gonna wrap it up here, and like I said, tune in tomorrow for Full Spectrum Radio, 8 o'clock Central Time, right here on the URN Radio Network.
Yes.
Thanks,
I will be there.
Yeah, thanks, Matt and Brian, for coming on and helping me out tonight while Jody has a drunken great time
at
the baseball game.
Yeah, no
problem, right? Man. Yep. You guys have a good night.
All right.
You too, Brian.
See you about it. Crying loud all the way up town. You've been searching for that someone that
Yeah.